I had no idea what was going on with her. There was no updates. She could not and would not tell me anything. I think because she didn't even know. I felt so like just helpless and alone, and just, you know, you give birth to this sweet soul, this baby, and they're immediately taken from you. And then on top of it, you don't know what's going on and if they're like fighting for their life or if they're going to survive.
This is the Life with Grief podcast, the podcast that talks about and normalizes the complexities of grief, life after loss, and all this entails, and so much more. I want you to think of this podcast as a safe space where I'm a friendly face and we're just journeying through this together to figure out how to live life with our grief in tow. I'm your host, Tara Accardo. I'm a grief and transformational life coach, and I'm here to serve you guidance, support, tangible coping tools, inspiration, and some laughs along the way to help you cultivate a more meaningful, intentional, and beautiful life. But grieving or not, we're getting into countless topics here on the podcast, from coping with loss to self-development and so much more. I'm so grateful you're here. Let's dive right in.
Hello and welcome back to the Life with Grief podcast. I'm your host, Tara Accardo. And today's episode is a special one because I am sharing the birth story of our daughter, Audrey. I have to be honest, I was really going back and forth on sharing this. There was definitely a time in this journey in these last 2-3 months where I did not want to relive this. I wasn't super comfortable sharing parts of it. And there are some parts, and also just for the sake of time today, honestly, that I will not go into a crazy amount of detail about. But I think it's just an important story to share, not only because I just want to be very open and vulnerable with you guys and my grief journey and life with grief, right? But this birth was such an important lesson in intuition for me and listening to my intuition, which I've always felt like I was a fairly intuitive person, but honestly, since the deaths of my parents and as I've continued to grow in my grief and become more introspective and am better about self-reflection and really like listening to my gut, I just felt like this was such a beautiful example of that. And it's a scary one too, because had I not listened to my intuition as I did, the outcome of our daughter's life would have been very different. And by that, I mean, she would not have made it. She would not be here right now. So I'm going to get into that and I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Before we dive into this story though, obviously just some kind of trigger warnings here. Of course, I will be talking about pregnancy in general. That probably goes without saying if I'm talking about a birth story. So pregnancy process, the birthing process, more specifically emergency C-sections, of course, just the hospital, which in and of itself can be triggering for some people. Spoiler alert, our daughter was in the NICU for a certain amount of time, so I will be talking about that experience as well. And overall, just a bit of a traumatic birth story. So if you have been through anything like that and feel this might be a little bit too much for you to hear right now, please feel free to skip over this episode or pause it and come back to it. If you have lost a child and this just might be a little difficult for you to hear, I just want to give fair warning here. Again, sort of spoiler, our daughter is well and thriving now. But her entrance into this world was very scary, and that is ultimately the story I will be telling today. So we conceived our daughter in like late May of 2023. We are very blessed in that it was a quick process for us. I'll just leave it at that. We were planning though, so I was definitely hyper aware of getting pregnant, and within, you know, 2-3 weeks, found out we were expecting. It was actually, I think, like a day or two before our first wedding anniversary, which is June 11th. So yeah, I think it was like the 9th or the 10th that I found out. So we were very excited. Again, I'll be very honest, like it was a pretty easy pregnancy in terms of morning sickness. I don't say that to shove this in anyone's face. I actually say that more to lead up to the birthing process, right? So it's more that, you know, you could have this really amazing, beautiful pregnancy, but it just goes to show you like your actual birth can really surprise you. And I'll talk about birth plans and stuff in a second, but just like cautionary tale, like even the easiest and most beautiful pregnancies on paper, you just never know. So, but that being said, I had a little bit of morning sickness and some aversions to smells and things between probably weeks like 5 and 10. So very much like first trimester timeframe. And then really when the second and third trimesters came around, that subsided. I definitely had some lower back pain though. I am still convinced it was some temporary sciatica or something. It was really bad in the last trimester especially, but that started really early for me. I don't know, just really uncomfortable back pain. But I did my best. I was as healthy as I could be. I worked out until like the last second. And even if it was easier workouts, that's like the one thing I can recommend, especially if anybody here is like thinking about having kids or getting pregnant or whatever, just like keep moving. Like do not stop. Even if it's walks, which I also did with the help of a belly band when my belly was getting heavier, even towards the end of the pregnancy. Cannot recommend it enough. Anyway, so yeah, without belaboring that, pretty great pregnancy. I should mention our daughter's original due date was February 19th. Ironically enough, we have our maternity photo shoot like the first weekend in January. Very grateful that we got those photos when we did, which leads me to really the beginning of this story. So that week, you know, I'm in my third trimester, little over a month from giving birth, in theory, assuming she hadn't come early on her own. And, you know, as babies, obviously they're getting bigger and they're, it's not uncommon, of course, for them to move a little bit less or, you know, they're losing space, right? Or it becomes more of like a rolling, maybe not quite so much kicking, things like that. So I was like mentally prepared for that and kind of told myself if that happens or starts happening, not to totally freak out. It's really weird because going into like getting pregnant and this pregnancy journey, I had this sort of like, I'm going to say irrational because I'm actually truly not sure where this came from, but I just had this fear that like I was either going to have a hard time getting pregnant or like it was going to take a while or that there was just something that was gonna be off about this pregnancy or like that I was just scared of losing it, to be honest with you. I don't know why. Could have been intuition, honestly, but yeah, there was just something that left me on edge. And I tried really hard throughout the whole pregnancy not to stress about that. And honestly, the more time went on, the more kicks and everything that I felt, the more confident I felt that she was okay. So you know, with time, I got more comfortable with that. And she honestly, bless her heart, was pretty consistent with her movements and when she would move. She moved a lot at night, like right after dinner, which often babies in the womb, you know, will move after you eat because they're getting a little food in there too. So yeah, she just kind of had her times of day where she was more active. So she was still fairly consistent. So if nothing else, even if I was feeling, you know, less kicking or movement or whatever as she got bigger, I at least sort of relied on that. So that week in January, so this is kind of like January week 2-ish now, I started feeling less movement as far as like when this started happening. I remember feeling a little bit less that week, but so that like Wednesday, especially Thursday, Friday, I remember like really noticing she was overall moving less after I ate. And there was this one night and it was, so that Friday, so this is January 12th. I do remember kind of feeling her moving a little bit less that day, but I wasn't like super concerned yet. I was more just like, I was sort of in this mode of like, okay, I'm keeping an eye on this. I'm not freaking out yet, but I'm keeping an eye on it. And that night we went over to my in-laws, we had some dinner. And I remember this specifically because I was kind of like feeling around my belly and stuff, because at this point I was becoming more aware of it, like kind of hyper aware of her movements. And I was not feeling her even like rolling. I got like one kick that entire night. And I was like, this is really weird. And I actually said it out loud. My mother-in-law even remembers me saying this, like, this is kind of weird. She's not like moving very much, like not as much as she normally does. And so I would say it was at that point that the concern really, really kicked in. As the night went on, slept that night. So Saturday morning rolls around. So this is now January 13th. And I was up around like 5:30, 6-ish, I think is kind of when I looked at the clock. And I remember, like, you know, at this point, a lot of hospitals will want you to be doing like kick counts and things like that because the baby stops moving less. They want you to still like be diligent and be on top of it, of these like movements. And I'll be honest with you, I never did the whole like filling out the little card thing they gave me. I felt very in touch with her and I just knew when she moved and I knew the times during the day when she was a little less active. So I didn't worry about it too much, but I remember laying in bed and I was like on my left side because that's the side they tell you to be on, you know, to get the most blood flow, and was not really feeling movement. So now I'm like getting panicky a little, still trying to keep it calm and cool, but I got up and I was like, okay, well, let me try and eat something. I was like doing, just trying to do all the right things that they tell you to do when you're kind of feeling your baby move a little bit less. So I ate a little something, still continued to lay on my side, and I was just not feeling anything. So at that point, I was like, okay, something is wrong. And in the day or two leading up to that, when I was kind of expressing this to my husband, and this is not like a knock on him or anything, but this is just like women out there, this is me planting the seed. Listen to your intuition, because you could have everyone around you be like, oh, don't worry about it. I'm sure everything's fine. Like, don't worry. It's all good. And that's what he was saying to me. He's like, oh, I wouldn't worry, sweetie. Like, she's probably fine. She's just getting bigger, less active, you know, all the typical stuff. But I knew, like, I just knew something was not right. Like, I'm growing this human, right? She's been with me now for, well, at that point, it was like 8 months, whatever it was. And I was like, no, this is different. Something's really wrong here. So before my husband even like was up yet, I called the hospital and kind of just spoke with the, I actually don't know who it was now, just like the birthing center, wherever we were planning on giving birth to her. I was explaining what was going on. They were very calm, very helpful on the phone, and ultimately said, you know what, mom, like if you are feeling things are not right, if your intuition is telling you something, like come on in, like let's just check it out. What is the worst case scenario, right? Things are fine and we send you home. I'm like, all right, cool. It would really put my mind at ease to go do that. So told my husband that and he was like, wow, you're really worried, huh? I was like, yeah, honestly, I am. Like, I know this baby, something's wrong. So we go to the hospital. I am really internally, this is actually really taking me back. I remember like sitting in the car and I was just like very quiet. I knew something was like really not right. So we get there, get all checked in and everything. Thank God it was a Saturday. So there was no like C-sections they were doing. It was like actually very like calm and quiet. And so we like get in there, they take us to triage, they get me hooked up, they're doing like an IV, all the things, monitoring me. And so when they first got me and baby and everything kind of like hooked up to things, there was a heartbeat. So we knew she was alive, but it was like the heart rate and the blood pressure and all of that was not where they wanted it to be. They were like, it's a little low. So they bring a doctor in who did a sonogram of the baby. So basically what they were looking for here is like 20 minutes worth of sonogram, and they're looking for very specific movements. And I won't even go into detail about what the movements were. I honestly cannot remember them perfectly right now, so I'd probably botch it. But they were looking for specific things. She saw like very incremental, barely movements. So she knew she was like in there. We knew she was alive, but the lack of movement was really concerning. I could even like, she had a great poker face, but I could see it on her face. Like, and I also just feel like I'm the type of person that reads and feels energy pretty well. So I could feel things shifting in the room a little bit. And so she was kind of just like, okay, well, be very honest, I'm not really seeing the movement that we want to see. So let's dig into this. And this is where things now are getting a little bit fuzzy. But basically, I kind of remember like there was just nurses in and out sort of a lot, to be honest. But at one point, they all go out. They had me kind of like going from side to side a little bit, just different positions just to see what's happening. The original nurse that got us all like checked in, got me hooked up to IVs and all of that, comes back in by herself, and she looks at us and she's like, okay, so I do not want to scare you, but from what we're all seeing, it's looking like this baby is telling us that she needs to probably come out via C-section today. I'm just replaying that in my head. It was a heavy moment. I'm gonna say we were shocked, because we were, I think probably my husband even more than me. But the reason I say that is because I knew something wasn't right, you know? And with what we were seeing on the monitors, what we saw on the sonogram, I knew she was in distress of some kind. So there was no way she was going to be going to full term with this. You know, I knew one way or another she was going to be coming before February 19th. She was coming before her due date. Did I think or know it was going to be right then that day? No. So we like look at each other. We're like, oh, I'm just going to swear here. Sorry, guys. Oh, shit. But you kind of, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I don't want to actually speak for my husband here. But for me, I was like, let's go. Like, again, I'm going to swear here, guys. So just bear with me. Like, again, these are honest thoughts here. I was like, let's fucking go. Let's get, I don't care what you have to do. I don't care what happens to me. I mean, like, I do. I want to be healthy and alive for her. But like, I'm good. Take care of my baby. Get her out if she needs to get out. And I think I even expressed that to the nurse in no uncertain terms. And so we're like trying to unpack all of this and just how quickly things turned. We went from thinking we had 5 more weeks with her inside of me to you're giving birth probably today. So from there, they gave me a shot to help open her lungs, because obviously she was going to be 5 weeks early at this point, you know, she was not going to be as developed as she needed to be. And the lungs were obviously a big part of that. So they thought, stay tuned for this. That was actually not going to be the main problem. But anyway, they basically wanted to keep me pregnant as long as possible. So even if that meant another 24 hours, that's what they wanted. And so they explained that this shot, they gave me kind of one part of it now, and the plan was to give me the other half or the other part of it in 24 hours. So that would have put us around like 12:30 noon on Sunday, January 14th. They're like, okay, you're going to be staying here. You're not getting discharged. You're not going anywhere. This baby has to come out here pretty soon. So at that point, we tell some family. Obviously, my parents were not there to tell. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But my husband calls his parents, my in-laws. I tell my family. Crazy enough, I swear to God, my friends had some intuition about some stuff too. One of my friends just happened to text me that morning like, hey, mama, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And then one of my other friends, funny enough, she was like on her like Find My app on her iPhone, but she was like, hey, like, I see you're at the hospital. Are you guys okay? Crazy stuff. Like, again, just the universe acting in weird ways. And I don't actually think I responded to them in that moment, to be honest. I can't remember when I got back to everybody, but I was not in the place to like text people. The only people I FaceTimed was like my dad's side of the family. And I think I actually let my mom's side know too, like my grandma, just select few very close family members, just to have some support, you know, even if I wasn't ready to talk about it, just so some people knew what was going on. So we're in this room. The shot is supposed to be doing its thing. They still have me hooked up to more monitors because they even said, they're like, we're going to still keep an eye on baby because, you know, from some of the signs and things she was telling us as far as like decreasing heart rate and blood pressure and all of that, like we're keeping an eye on both of you. So they go out of the room again. I think it was not even like a half an hour from when they got us into this new room to when I had turned on my right side and it was still just my husband and I, and we look at the monitors and I think it was her heart rate or blood pressure, whatever it was, dropped significantly, like almost like not alive significantly. And we were like, oh, this is not good. I was like, this is making me nervous. So I go on the other side. I kind of turned to my left to try and like get that back up, which it did go back up. But very soon after that, nurse comes in and she's like, okay, we're doing this C-section right now. We are not waiting until tomorrow. She needs to come out. So things happened very, very quickly from there. I'm not going to say I was like immediately rushed into the operating room, but like it was quick. So within minutes, you know, nurses are doing whatever they're doing to prep. I don't even know. Anesthesiologist comes in. He's walking me through everything. The blessing of having a team that is quick, that is responsive, but also like very calm is such a gift. It's such a blessing because I felt like there was just this perfect balance of them like being quick, doing what we needed to do to get this baby out safely, but they were just calm enough to not make us freak out more than we were already going to be freaking out. So very lucky in that regard. Anesthesiologist, I always botch that word, did a great job of explaining everything. And before I knew it, I was walking into the OR. Originally went in by myself. They were like, okay, dad, we'll come back and get you. Obviously they just need to get me all figured out. And I'm already going into a lot of detail on the story, so I'll speed this next part up, I promise. But basically I get in there, have me sitting, and it's crazy. I've never had like a procedure. I've never had surgery. So I kind of didn't know what to expect. Like for those mothers out there maybe who are listening that have had a C-section, like, you know, it is a legit operating room. I don't know if I knew what to expect, but I was like, whoa, this is like no joke. Very sterile. There's a lot of people in there. Like I think at one point I was kind of trying to distract myself, but there was like maybe 8 to 10 people in there. But, you know, again, this anesthesiologist, he was just walking me through every step, doing an amazing job with that to just like be like, okay, this is what is going to happen. Really helped calm my nerves. So I get up on the table, fast forward, they give me the shot in my back, and you know, you have to be all hunched over for that and all the things. And honestly, that for me, I was like, I don't care. Like, I was at the point, this may be like more of my type A side coming out. I was like, let's just move this along. Like, let's get this freaking baby out. Like, I'm a little panicky for her, not so much for me right now. Anyway, so they get me all settled, get the tarp up, all the things. They bring my husband in. He sits up there with me. He did not look over that curtain at all. Not that I blame him. I think that would have been a little much for him. And honestly, in retrospect, I think that was a really good decision because of this next part of the story. So the other thing about our daughter is, and we knew this, we knew she was like transverse, I guess. She was not in the birthing position whatsoever. She was breached and transverse. So her head was like up near my right boob, basically, she was nowhere near where she was supposed to be. So I remember, I couldn't like feel it, but I know that they were like massaging my belly, trying to get her to like go down. It was wild. It was like the weirdest sensation, but they are just working on that and make the incision. And however many minutes later it was, I don't know, they took her out and she was here. And I also remember, I think it was the anesthesiologist saying, if she is okay and if all is good enough, we will bring her up to you, kind of put her on her chest. We'll let you say hi to her really quick, right? If she needs a little more work or if she needs a little more, I don't even know what they said, but basically if she needed some more like care, urgent care, we're going to just take her right over to the little like incubator and get her all situated. So when she came out, we didn't hear a cry right away. It was actually like, again, I don't know how long, at least maybe a minute or two until we heard a cry, and it was the sweetest, most hopeless little cry. But they didn't bring her up to me. They took her right to the incubator, and that's how I don't know if that's the right word, by the way, whatever they took her to, this little table to work on her. So I knew she was in enough of a dire state that they needed to give her that urgent care before allowing me to see her. So at that point, you know, there's a team working on her. They are stitching me up. They're working on me. And again, if you've had a C-section, you know, it's like the actual process of them taking them out and like that birth is like quicker than it is to like sew you back up. Like that takes a hot minute. And so they're doing that. At this point, I'm just happy she's out and I'm happy she's alive. Like we did not know the extent to which it was yet. So I can't say I was like in a lot of panic at this point, but I was on edge for sure. And so was my husband. You know, we're just like, okay, any updates? Like she good? What's going on? Doctor sort of like comes over to the side. And again, I'm paraphrasing here. He was like, okay, so she's out. She's alive. She's incredibly pale. Like, and I mean, she was white as a ghost, you guys, like very, had absolutely no color. And, you know, whatever he had said to us, he basically was just like, we're going to take you to the NICU right now. So, and just like that, she was gone. I didn't see her. I had no contact with her. And I'm just going to like pause here really quick and say like, you know, I was really cautious not to get like married to any birth plan. Like I had hoped, it's funny, I had said to a lot of people, I was like, I almost don't care like how she comes out. I just want her birth to be like as peaceful and non-traumatic as possible. Which the irony of which is not lost on me now, because she had probably the most traumatic, I don't want to say the most traumatic, one of the most traumatic like ways to come out, having to just be like massaged out of me, just, you know, like ripped out before she was ready. Didn't get any like mommy or daddy bonding time before she was put into this like incubator and taken away from us. And she was just, it was like, you know, parents' worst nightmare. So they're going to take her out. And I was still, you know, getting stitched up. So they were like, you know, dad, if you want to come with us, you can or whatever. I was like, babe, go, please go. Like, I want someone having eyes on her. I just want one of us there with her. And I can't be, obviously. So please go. I'm good. So he goes. And they got me all situated. They wheel me out into this other kind of like recovery room where I had to be for a minimum of 2 hours. I hated this room so much. It was so just dark and unfriendly. It almost like it was a room, but it like, they also had weird, like it almost felt like a storage closet. There was like a ladder and stuff over in the corner. It was like, it was so weird, you guys. Like it was just really uncomfortable. It's very strange for a hospital. But, and this nurse was kind of just like doing stuff on the computer. This was one of the nurses where I liked her, but like that's where I was like, can you do just a little more to like reassure me? I don't know. It was just really weird. I just kind of sat there in silence with her. I had no idea what was going on with her. There was no updates. She could not and would not tell me anything. I think because she didn't even know. I felt so like just helpless and alone and just, you know, you give birth to this sweet soul, this baby, and they're immediately taken from you. And then on top of it, you don't know what's going on and if they're like fighting for their life or if they're going to survive. Like, it was horrible. So eventually, you know, she's kind of in and out. A couple nurses are in and out. No one's really telling me much. My husband comes back in. He is not looking well. He is looking like very pale too. So I'm like now concerned for him. I'm like, what is happening? Like, what is going on? Like, what went down? Like, are you okay? So I'm just going to apologize in advance because at this point, things were kind of like weirdly calm, but also chaotic. Like, I think more in my head than anything. And I cannot remember really like who gave me what information, when I found things out and all of that. It was a bit of a blur. Probably blacked some of it out too, if I'm being honest. But essentially, I come to find out that she lost a significant amount of blood, which is why she was so pale, like white. She was severely, severely anemic, and she was going to need minimum one, if not more, blood transfusions, which they did as quickly as they could. So I think like my husband had come back in. They at some point had been like, okay, she needs a transfusion. We're doing this. And I was like, wait, like who gave the consent for that? But my husband was like, I signed the paper. Like we just had to do it. I was like, okay, whatever we need to do to keep her alive. So they ended up actually doing two blood transfusions at this particular hospital in that NICU. So that process had been started to help her get her blood back. And at some point, I think in this 2 hours of being in this room, I think it was at some point during that time that we found out that she was going to possibly need to be transferred. They were on the phone with other like experts, which was comforting, but it was like whatever had happened to her was to the point where like they had not seen this before, at least at this hospital. It was like crazy stuff, you guys. Like they were like, we're trying to figure out how this happened and what went wrong, you know? So she was preemie, right? Like she had typical preemie issues. She was going to have typical preemie issues. There could have been like, you know, developmental delays. Like obviously her lungs weren't fully developed, like a digestive system, like all of these things that a baby born early would have.
Real quick interruption here, and then we'll get back to this episode. If you're someone who is experiencing some form of loss and are trying to navigate the complexities of grief, which you likely are in some capacity if you've stumbled upon this podcast, then this message is for you. If you haven't heard about my Life with Grief membership and community yet, this is truly something you need to check out. This membership is here to guide you into living a deeper, more meaningful, and full life after experiencing loss. Who doesn't want that, right? I created this membership because I know what it's like to navigate and cope with grief on a daily basis, and I know the tools and support it takes to do this effectively. I've done the work myself, and I've coached people just like you to do the same. It comes down to having impactful, effective resources and tools at your disposal, having the right support around you from people who can understand and empathize with your grief, and having encouragement and inspiration around you consistently to not only elicit and spark change, but to keep it and keep the positive momentum going. Enrollment opens once a month for a limited time. Check out the details linked in the description, and I hope to see you in there.
So the difference with Audrey, with our daughter, is that, and we actually did not find this out until later because, you know, they're trying to figure out the source of this blood loss. And what we came to find out was that, and I honestly, again, I don't totally understand this percentage I'm going to share with you, but this is what I was told, is that 120% of her fetal blood leaked into my blood system, And what I'm about to say is not to be braggy, this is like a fact. We had one of the best neonatologists in all of California caring for her at one point later on in her NICU journey. And even he was like, I've never really seen anything like this. We had the placenta sent out to see if there was any trauma to it. You know, we talked to the doctors who delivered Audrey and, you know, asked them, like, was there any trauma? Was there a lot of blood loss? When there was nothing. There was nothing, you guys, that would like explain how this blood loss happened and where this came from. It is, to this day, it's still a mystery. And it's like, you know, that's unsettling, especially because my husband, like, well, if we ever have another kid, is this going to happen again? Like, we don't know. You know, we've spoken to doctors, we spoke to her pediatrician and stuff, and a lot of them are just like, there's no reason to think that this is going to happen again. This truthfully just seemed to be like kind of a freak accident, to be honest. This is just like a really fluky thing, which is like, what? Like, we don't have any answers. We're not going to get any answers. Are you kidding? But they don't know. They still don't know what happened. All they could really eventually determine after all of this is like, you know, they don't know how the blood loss started to happen. They don't know when the leak from the placenta and all of that started. They don't know how, and they don't know what caused it. And they even said it's interesting because there was, you know, if you're saying there was no trauma to you, like, what would cause blood loss like this is maybe like you were in a car accident or like you got hit somehow, like really obviously to kick that off. But if you didn't, like, we think this was probably a leak that had happened. But again, at what point, we don't know. They just think it was probably happening slowly, which is probably why I was still feeling her kicking and stuff. But then, like, it kind of gradually stopped. It wasn't more like, okay, I had this traumatic event happen, and then, like, immediately after that, I felt her not moving. It didn't go down like that. So, go figure. I've come to some form of terms with that, but at first that was like, what? Like, you've got to be kidding. So, yeah. So that evening she had two blood transfusions, but at some point during the afternoon, evening, we were told that she, again, we're in Northern California. So we, at this particular hospital, was about 45 minutes to an hour away from Oakland, California, where it is the UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. It's one of the best in the country, thank God. But they were like, you know, we are actually going to be transferring her there because we cannot give her the level of care that she needs here. She needs another transfusion. So this is transfusion number 3. And she needs plasma and other blood matter in this particular transfusion. And we can't do that here. So she's going to have to go there. And I was like, oh my God, how could this continue to get worse? And I can't remember, honestly, if I was told that before or after seeing her. I think before seeing her for the first time. So basically they had me in this room, like I said, for a couple hours. They finally allowed me to see her. And obviously I'm in like a very delicate state at this point, having just had a C-section an hour or two before. But they were like, if we can get you in a wheelchair, like, they were also monitoring for pain too. They were like, how are you doing with your pain? And not to toot my own horn, but I think I have a pretty high pain tolerance. So I was like, get me to see my freaking baby. So managed to get me in a wheelchair and wheeled me into the NICU. I was able to see her. My husband had actually had some photos and videos that he actually couldn't even take them. He even told me when he came back in that room, he was like, I couldn't even really get near her. Like, the doctors took these photos and videos and gave them to me. I was like, oh my God. So he showed me. So I knew what she looked like. I knew what I was going to be looking at going in there, but nothing can actually prepare you for seeing that in person, right? So I look at her, I immediately start crying. It was like probably top 3 worst moments of my life. And yeah, I just sat there staring at her, as you know, as close as we could get. But like, she was just this helpless little being. all just had so many wires and tubes and the breathing apparatuses and just everything she needed to help her sustain life. So we were there for a while, and then they were eventually getting ready to, they were like, okay, let's get you back to a room. We're doing these transfusions, and then we're going to get her ready to go, to be transferred. So we're like, oh my God, okay. So once that was all determined, we were put into this other room, a much more like legitimate, nicer hospital room. And from there, it was honestly all kind of a blur, but it eventually got to the point where they were getting ready to transfer her within minutes. So they were like, do you want to see her again before she, I was like, yeah, obviously if I could be going with her, I would. And unfortunately my husband, they couldn't have anybody, obviously I wasn't going anywhere, just had a C-section, but my husband couldn't even go with them because there was no room in the ambulance. But anyway, we saw her one last time. Very, very emotional. They left with her. We went back to the room. They, of course, were like, you know, we will keep you updated along the way. And so we're in this room and I'm talking to my husband and I was like, I don't want to leave her there. Like, I don't want her going through this other transfusion. Like, God forbid something worse happens here, or God forbid this goes some other way. I want one of us there with her. And so a little while later, my husband gets ready to leave. And this is like late at night at this point. Like, I can't honestly remember. It's probably at least 10 or 11 at night by the time all of this transpired. And so he goes, and thank God, like my sister and brother-in-law were like already at this hospital before she even got there, which like, I'm so grateful for them. Just like, again, just having some family there to like be there when she got there and everything. And then my husband's parents ended up going down as well, and so they were all there with him as she was getting this other transfusion. And meanwhile, I am sitting in this hospital room completely alone by myself, at the mercy of whatever my husband is sending me, photo and video and texting, calling wise, and just keeping me updated on everything. And this is just like a sidebar, but if anybody here is navigating life and parenthood without your parents, or without at least a parent that you so desperately need, you know how hard this is. And this was a situation where I was like, I never, in the last like 3 or 4 years of losing my parents, I never needed them more. In that moment, I just remember sitting there being like, God, I just need my mom and my dad. I just wish I had like anybody. But at the same time, I was like, I need to be alone. It was the weirdest sensation. Like, and my friends, even afterwards, they were like, Tara, I feel so bad that you were there by yourself doing that. I was like, you guys, it's okay. Like, I think I needed that aloneness in a weird way to process everything that had happened and everything that was going on. And I'll be honest, like, my parents are the only people I would have wanted there in the room with me as that was happening. So, which I know they were in spirit, but yeah, didn't make it any easier. So I'm going to speed this next part of the story up, because really that was like the birth part that I just wanted to get out there and communicate with you all in this process. And like I said, you know, just to wrap that part up, and then I'll just high level explain sort of what all happened after this. Like, listen to your freaking gut, listen to your intuition. If something feels wrong, if something doesn't feel right, if you know in your heart something does not feel aligned, or it is not sparking joy for you, or it is, you know, this is birth and outside of birth, like, speak up, don't question it, go with it, you know, because I think the scariest part about this whole experience is that many, many nurses that day I gave birth, and in every single NICU she was in after, because I'll high level explain sort of what happened next, but she was in 3 different NICUs after this. Doctors and nurses had all told me in their own respective ways, like, had you waited even a day more, she would not be here right now. Like, how do you process that as a new parent, as a new mom? One of them very specifically, a doctor, the neonatologist, he was like, if you had waited even until Sunday, she would have died. Like, his bedside manner was he was a little more intense than some of the other nurses. A lot of the other nurses were just like, it's such a good thing you came in when you did. Great job, mama. Like, you listened to your heart and your gut when you knew something wasn't right. Like, this could have been a much sadder outcome. Like, no pressure, right? So it's just wild. It's really wild to think about how differently this could have gone and how differently this does go for so many parents out there. It just breaks my heart now, especially being in this position. I mean, it broke my heart before I became a mom, but now, like, being on this side of it, whole nother meaning to that. So next day, very, very long story short, you know, the blood transfusion went well. My husband was there throughout all of that. She was stable. She was okay. She was not well. They used the word sick a lot, which I really didn't like. They were like, you know, she's a very sick baby. She's very unwell. And all, I was like, oh, I just hate that word. Like, I knew that, but like, ugh, can we come up with a different word for it, please? But I was miraculously discharged that following day. That evening, it was late, because they basically, I spent that whole Sunday, you know, they were like, you gotta eat, please eat, work on pumping. They were like already trying to get me pumping and everything, and trying to get me to, you know, to get my milk to come in, because they were like, she is gonna need every bit of colostrum, which is that like initial milk, right, that comes out, that is liquid gold. She is going to be having that eventually. Like, she was on something else as far as like getting nutrition at that point, but they were like, you know, she's gonna need all that colostrum, mom, so like, get pumping, get going with all of this. But anyway, that was Sunday. It was just like getting my energy back up. They want to make sure you can like go to the bathroom by yourself X amount of times. You have to have a certain amount of bowel movements, and they're ultimately managing your pain too, and making sure you can manage your pain before you're discharged. And they were like, well, you're doing well. So, and I know you're dying to see your baby, so let's get you out of here. So they did. And at some point during that day, my husband like went back to our house. We switched cars. We didn't have a car seat or anything. You know, we were still very much not ready for her. If you are watching this on the video version, like, I am in her nursery now, but like, this was not at all prepared. We thought we had time. So yeah. And then he got back, I got discharged, and we headed down to Oakland. And that night basically throughout her time at Benioff, we stayed at an Airbnb for like the first maybe 3-4 days or so. On the last night, they arranged housing for us, which was interesting without going into a lot of detail on that. But thankfully, she was there. I don't even know how many days she was there, to be very honest with you. I think like 5 or 6 days. And she made, I'm so grateful to say this, she made a miraculous turnaround. Every day she got better. Every day she was getting better color, heart rate, blood pressure, just all the things that they were watching just continued to improve. I 100,000,000% feel that my mom and dad and guardians and angels and all of the beautiful things and people were looking out for her and for us during that time. I really do feel that. I definitely feel like I felt my parents' presence throughout a lot of that, especially in the NICU. Had, again, a just amazing medical team. Like, that hospital is unreal. I feel very fortunate that she got a place there when she so desperately needed it. And so she was there for a while, like several days, like I mentioned. And then they were like, okay, well, she's much better. She's getting to the point where she doesn't need our level of care anymore, so we feel comfortable transferring her to another NICU, which was in the same chain of hospitals of where she was born, but it was a different location because their NICU was a step above the one where we gave birth at. So they were like, we don't feel quite comfortable sending her back there, but we'll send her to this other hospital, which for us was an hour there and back from where we lived. So we were like, okay, we'll figure this one out. So she was transferred there. She was there for quite a few days. It had to have been over a week. I totally blanked on all the details of this now, to be honest with you, but she was there for quite a few days. And each and every day, we didn't end up getting an Airbnb for that place. So we just really wanted to be home at that point. But, you know, we weren't necessarily allowed to just sleep there and stay there. There was no place for us to do that. But she was also stabilizing and getting stronger to a place where we were like, okay, I think we can go home each night and be more comfortable, because frankly, we were so uncomfortable those first 5 or 6 days. It was rough. And then, you know, again, anybody who's ever recovered from a C-section, you need and want to be comfortable. I was waking up constantly to pump. I had shakes and shivers and stuff. My body temperature was all messed up. And, you know, it was interesting. I have to say there was some weird blessing in disguise with this whole situation, and that, you know, for a lot of women, for most women that might have a C-section, a lot of the time, you know, they do tell you to make sure and kind of be up and, you know, don't necessarily, at least this is what I was told, you know, don't feel the need to be totally bedridden. It's good that you're moving, but I almost feel like I was moving almost more than I should have, or more than I normally would have, more than I normally had to, because we were going to see her every day. And that took a lot of energy and that took a lot out of me, but I had to, you know, walk somewhat a lot and get in and out of the car and things. And we, you know, kept me in a wheelchair going up and down and everything in the NICU as much as we could. But you know, it was a lot of movement for someone who just had major abdominal surgery. So that whole, I won't even get into all of that, but that whole situation was a recovery in and of itself. But I have to say, I almost feel like this whole situation helped me recover from that. I don't even want to say quicker, but just differently than I would have otherwise, which looking back was kind of a weird blessing in all of this. But yeah, so she was at that NICU for a while and we were going back and forth every day. Like I said, it was exhausting. It was very exhausting. We were wiped every single day. And just, if you've been in a NICU or you work in one or you were a parent of a NICU baby, they can be exhausting to be in general. And, you know, it's just emotionally exhausting and taxing, watching your sweet baby, trying to fight for their life a little bit. There's a lot of helplessness that you feel with that, but also a lot of hope at the same time. And then there's all these other sweet little babies around that are also in a tough state right now and are also not really well. And there was one time at that second NICU that there was an emergency C-section that had to happen. And then they were prepping. There was just a lot of chaos kind of going on to bring this baby in. It was very much probably how it was with Audrey when she was born. And we could sense the baby was going to be coming in, and it was coming. And I was holding Audrey at this point. And my husband literally was like, I can't be here for this. I think I'm going to step out. Is that okay? I was like, yeah, of course. You know, it was very fresh for us still, even though she was doing better. And I was so grateful for that. It's very traumatizing, to be very honest with you. So he had to step out for a while because he didn't want to see that. I don't blame him. So yeah, so she was at that NICU for a while. They eventually came to tell us all right, she's not quite ready to go home, but we're going to transfer her back to the original hospital that she was at just to, you know, really get her all good, ready to go home for you guys. They wanted us to be able to, you know, I need to be able to breastfeed her properly, bottle feed her properly because she had to get this formulated breast milk to help her gain weight and get extra nutrients and all the things. We actually, as of the time of this recording, just now finished all of that with her. You know, there's a lot of follow-ups, at least in the hospital system we were in, at least in California, like there's a lot of follow-ups with NICU babies and her specifically because of the blood loss and a lot of the blood things that happened with her. Like she had to have MRIs. They found a couple spots in her brain that were, I'm not going to say concerning, but like they wanted to keep an eye on because she, you know, that was the most concerning part about her whole journey is that, and this is kind of what differentiated her from other NICU babies, her, at least in her little journey with it. You know, each one is unique and important in their own way, but she, you know, because she had such blood loss, like that meant a lack of oxygen to everything, to vital organs. And so they had to continue monitoring and will continue monitoring that she's going to be okay. And that, you know, that doesn't have long-term effects. And it's scary because, you know, she's doing incredible right now and we have no reason to believe that she's not going to be okay. But, you know, the doctors were very honest with us. They were like, you know, there's a lot we're not going to know until she's older. So we're like, cool, great. So happy to hear that. Like, great, more unknowns. But at first that was really worrying. But, you know, day by day with all of this. So she spent 18 days in all of these NICUs combined. Longest 18 days of our life. It was such a learning experience. I cannot even tell you. We learned a lot about babies and bringing life into this world. We learned a lot about ourselves. We learned a lot about each other. I mean, this is like a very serious test of a marriage, of a relationship, and how we each manage stress and sadness and grief, because although, and you know, I talk about this all the time, grief is not necessarily the loss of a loved one, right? Like there was a lot of things we had to grieve throughout this process that we're still kind of grieving. Like me specifically, like having a quote unquote normal birth experience. I thought I would give birth vaginally. I was like kind of up in the air with the epidural. I was like, yeah, we'll see what happens. This could not have been anywhere further away from what I envisioned. So there's that, you know, that feeling of being a mom and having your baby placed on your chest right after they're born. Didn't get that. That was very much robbed. I had the polar opposite of that. And just so many little things along the way that we just had, you know, we had to cope with. The first 2-3 weeks of her life did not look at all like we thought it would. And we felt very robbed of a peaceful, beautiful homecoming. We got that eventually. I want to acknowledge that. Like, and we felt so whole and fulfilled when we got to bring her home, but it was not in the quote usual way. Our journey looked very different, just as it does for so many NICU parents out there. So, you know, without going on and on, there's just a lot of things that we had to just resign ourselves to along the way. And like I said, grieve and acknowledge and deal with. And so it really was, I talk about grief as like a day-to-day, moment-by-moment thing, but this experience really refreshed that for me and made me really realize like how much I truly mean that when I say that with a lot of this and this anticipatory grief and, you know, if we're really living on edge, if maybe we have a loved one or something that is not well and we are seeing them decline or we're seeing them in peril right in front of us, like coping with that and living with that and witnessing that is such, it's such a process. It's such a journey. It's such a difficult thing to have to do. And I've used the word helpless a few times today, and I'm going to use it again right here. Sometimes you just feel extremely helpless. But all you can do, whether it's a baby in the NICU or whoever this is just love on them, be there for them. There was one point where a nurse, she was like, so much of this is in little Audrey's hands. Like, we are doing everything we can. All you as parents can do is hug her and hold her and kiss her and love on her and be here in the NICU as much as you can. To like, it truly does make a difference. But you know what? A lot of this, it's going to be up to her. And it's going to be up to her body and how this all goes. Which was horrifying. Because we're like, she is just so weak and so fragile. Especially in those like early days. And we just did not know how this was going to go. It was very, very touch and go. For a little while. But like I said, we are so grateful and were so grateful that every day it just seemed like she was getting better. I'm not going to say it was leaps and bounds, but like there were some moments and some days where I was like, God, this is a freaking miracle. It's a miracle it was caught when it was. And I'm proud of myself for that as the mom, as just like a human being with an intuition and with feelings. I'm like, thank God I listened. And I'm so proud of our little girl for being as strong as she is. And just all the powers that be that made her homecoming and her little life now and her health journey and her getting better possible. I'm just very, very grateful because I know there are many people out there that are not as fortunate. So, you know, if I ever talk about gratitude in grief and gratitude in life and this process and things, I'll be very honest. I did not feel grateful that this happened to her. I was like, I remember, and especially these first few days when we were so scared. We were scared about what was happening to her in the moment, how this would affect her long term. We just hadn't, there were so many unknowns and things that we're like, we have no idea. But despite that, we just tried to be as positive as we could. We always tried to go into the NICU with smiles on our faces and to truly like embody happiness for her. We did our best to just check any nervousness or fear or whatever of what was going to happen at the door. I just remember like so many times we're sitting in the car and we're like, you know what? We are going to go in there. And it's not to like not feel our feels. We did. I mean, there were times in the NICU, we cried. We, you know what I mean? Like we held space for that and for each other. But what became more important was being strong and being present and being full of light and love and strength for her and like emitting that to her and into her, if that makes sense. So that's what we did every single day, every single moment, as much as we could. And there were moments of weakness, absolutely. Like, and we didn't try to hold that back. We didn't try to control that. We just, you know, felt our feels whenever we could, whenever we needed to. But, you know, when you just look at that little soul, this little baby, and you just want to just send them all of this strength and healing and energy that you can as much as possible, like that's what became the priority. So I just share this story, and there's a lot I could have gone into, and I know we're over an hour here into this episode, and this is longer than I kind of even anticipated. But like I said, I wanted to speak freely here. There's a lot about this that I could have gone into more depth into about this whole process. I'm sure I'm even forgetting some things that I wanted to touch on, but I think this is a pretty good summary for today. But you know, if I could just send any message to anyone going through something difficult right now, journeying through grief, trying to figure out life with grief, it's just to, like I said, live as much in that moment as you can. Live in that love, but also allow for the sadness and the fear and the longing for what you had or what you wish you had, but don't right now. Like, allow all of that to be seen and experienced, because to experience life, we experience joy and happiness and love, but we also experience loss and grief and heaviness. And the thing is, those two things can coexist and they can go hand in hand. Just finding gratitude in the things that are here, that are showing up, that are working, that is so important for just keeping our sanity and keeping our head on straight. And it is not to negate anything that you have lost or anything that you are or have gone through. It's just honoring space for both. And I think that is such an important message for anyone out there trying to live life with grief. The purpose and name of this podcast, right? That's the gist of this whole thing. And we are on this journey together. I am here with you. We all go through difficult life events. This is not one I anticipated for myself. I thought I'd be done for a while after my parents and my dog died. I was wrong, but I have lived through it. I can tell the story now. I have reflected. I will continue to reflect on everything that happened and on this experience. And all I know is that I will continue to learn and grow and evolve from it all. And you can too. And I know you are strong and resilient enough to do that. And I believe in you. So, with that all being said, if you made it to the end of this, thank you so much for listening to this story, to this personal side of me, and this update on my life today. I'm so grateful for all of you and for listening. Thank you so, so much for being here, and thank you for allowing me this space to share a story like this. It's very cathartic for me, and I think it's very healthy sharing stories like this, and I hope this makes you feel a little less alone today. So, all right, my friend, sending you lots of good vibes today, and I will see you in the next episode. I am sending you a huge thank you for tuning into today's episode, my friend. I'm so grateful you're here and for the steps you are taking to heal your heart, open your mind, fulfill your soul, learn, grow, and evolve, and move through this crazy thing called life in big, beautiful, impactful ways. Visit lossesbecomegains.com for my blog, ways to work with me, to shop my daily journal, and so much more. And be sure you're following along on Instagram and Facebook at Life with Grief Podcast. I love seeing new faces, meeting new people, hearing your stories, and supporting you however I can. Be sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. If you haven't left a rating or review, please do so. I would so appreciate it. Or if you feel so inclined to share this episode or this podcast with someone who could use it too. I'll catch you in the next episode.